The Golden State Warriors are the 2015 NBA champions. Their first title in 40 years.
For the first time since 1954, the Giants are world champions.
And you tell them one thing, just win, baby.
I'd say it's today's golden days.
Just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through. We gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through. We gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, 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 golden.
Bay's Golden Days. I'm Marcus Boucher, and welcome back to another UFC Aftermath episode here on the Bay's Golden Days podcast. I know it has been a while, my friends. I have been slacking. Your boy got a new job. Shout out KMBR 680. But no excuses here because I'm not the only man in MMA with a new job. Shout out Ariel Helwani. Finished up his last MMA hour on SB Nation this past week. He's taking the move to ESPN with UFC. If you haven't heard the news by now, UFC is taking their rights to ESPN. See you later, Fox. So we'll go ahead and talk about the TV deal, get you everything you need to know about what's been happening since the last time we talked. Yes, the last time we talked some UFC, it was the UFC 223 Aftermath. We talked about everything from the Conor McGregor fiasco to Khabib time taking over the UFC, baby, aka San Jose. Gotta give the shout outs here on the Bay's Golden Days Network. But we are back to give you a recap of not only UFC 225, but UFC 224, because I could have just done a UFC 224 Aftermath episode, but there were so many great fights in between UFC 224 and UFC 225 that I had to just group them all together to talk about all this action that's been going on in the middleweight and welterweight divisions in the UFC. So we'll go ahead and recap everything that went down in Brazil from UFC 224. We'll talk about Fight Night Chile, Kamaru Usman taking on Damian Maia. Fight Night Liverpool, we had Stephen Wonderboy Thompson versus Darren the Gorilla Till, and then we'll lead all the way up to UFC 225, Robert Whittaker versus Yoel Romero. Fight of the night, fight of the year. Hell, one of the best middleweight fights I've ever seen in my life. We'll get into the rematch and break down everything that happened, plus RDA versus Colby Covington, and then we'll even take a look ahead to next month, one of the biggest, baddest fight cards I've ever seen in my life, to determine the biggest, baddest man on the planet, Stipe Miocic versus AKA's own Daniel Cormier for the heavyweight championship of the world. Yes, you heard me correctly. We have a true super fight, light heavyweight champion, DC, taking on the firefighting heavyweight champion of the world, Stipe Miocic. Wow, what a card that's going to be. So we're going to go ahead and preview UFC 226, and then we'll go ahead and finish it up with some news and notes. Michael Bisping's retired. GSP coming back to 155. Does he want the winner of Khabib versus Conor McGregor? I think so, but we'll get into everything on this UFC 225 Aftermath podcast. But let's go ahead and start it off from a couple weeks ago, UFC 224 down in São Paulo, Brazil.
Some fighters pride themselves on taking the rocky path, climbing the steepest hills, and crashing through the obstacles put in their way.
Looking for the choke, looking for the choke. She's got the bulldog choke. She's out cold, she's out cold.
Some fighters are the pride, warriors who sacrifice everything they have to live a single day as the king of the jungle. Tonight, the women's bantamweight title is on the line. And it's time to find out who will reign supreme.
I see myself pushing the pace and dominating every position. And as soon as that fight's said and done, I see my hand being raised.
May 12 is going to be a battle. And for sure, I'm going to walk away with my belt.
But first, Octagon legends finally meet as one of the greatest knockout artists returns to Rio de Janeiro, where he earned his story nickname as the Phenom. He meets the most unpredictable karate striker in Brazil's history. The former champion, a dragon, on a quest back towards the top. In a strawweight clash, a decorated jiu-jitsu ace with a flair for dramatics returns after a successful debut to face a game challenger who has waited her whole life to realize this moment. In the co-main event, the middleweight division's deadliest predator looks to snap up another victim in his quest for contention. But standing in his way is a powerful force who has made a name for himself as a smasher of legacies. And finally, a title is on the line. The UFC's fiercest champion, who has turned in some of the most vicious and iconic performances in MMA history.
She's got the choke. She
tagged. And it's all over.
Oh, she tagged.
Big combination. Boom.
That's it. That's it. It's over.
Gets the chance to defend her title in front of her countrymen. Yet playing the spoiler is a mounting force of will, determination, grit, and self-belief.
She's under the chin, Mike. She is under the chin.
Can she finish it here?
She's got it. Andrade's gonna tap. She tapped.
A winner of four straight fights who will meet the champion head-on in her own backyard, bringing with her the very winds of change. Tonight, from Rio de Janeiro, it's UFC 224, Nunes versus Pennington, and it starts right now.
The UFC Aftermath podcast starts right now, and there's only one way I can start it if we're going to start off with UFC 224, and that's Vitor Belfort versus Lyoto Machida. Two legends going into it at the tail end of their careers, possibly a retirement fight for either one. This was the last fight on Vitor Belfort's contract. This is a man that's been fighting since 1996. He got into the UFC in 1997, made his debut in UFC 12. He's now fighting on UFC 224. There have been 212 events since Vitor Belfort made his debut. You want to talk about the true phenom, the man who came into the UFC when he was 19, 20 years old and was just destroying people, coming in with that BJJ background, but he would just stay on his feet and strike like a madman. Oh man, did I want him to go out on top against Lyoto Machida, who, if we're being honest, I've never been a fan of Lyoto Machida. Kind of a background story, he looked exactly like my ninth grade biology teacher and he failed me, so I've just always had a hatred against Lyoto Machida. But back to this fight, the dragon strikes once again. Lyoto Machida with the picture perfect crane kick, switch kick, whatever you want to call it, the Anderson Silva logo to the face. Man, that was a thing of beauty. He puts Vitor to sleep, and man, oh man, you don't want to see Vitor go out like that for his final UFC fight, but I don't think he's done by any means, because if we all are looking for the return of Vitor Belfort, we're looking for the return of TRT Belfort. Yes, you all know what I'm talking about. When Vitor Belfort was on the sauce, he was damn near unstoppable. Look what he did to Rockhold. Look what he did to Michael Bisping's eye. Vitor Belfort on the sauce, the pre-USADA era. Vitor Belfort was another man, the myth, the legend of his own. I remember back in those old UFC fight cards, they used to say, no known weakness. He is just too damn good. And that's what he was. He was the phenom. He was first of a kind. So we got to start off this podcast showing respect to Vitor. Like I said, it was his last fight on his UFC contract. I think now he goes over to Ryzen somewhere in Asia. Anywhere that lets him take some Mexican supplements to get him back to TRT Vitor, I don't care. I wouldn't mind seeing him one more time. Hell, get him back in Bellator. Let him fight Wanderlei Silva. I don't care. I want to keep seeing the guy fight. As long as he wants to fight, there are some rumors that Tito Ortiz and Chuck Liddell are going to be getting into a fight in Golden Boy Productions. Who knows? I just want an old man retirement league. That's what Bellator kind of is, but Bellator does have some young up-and-coming fights. They had a big card down here in San Jose the other weekend, but back to the point, Vitor, he's a legend. Tito Ortiz, he's a legend. Chuck Liddell, he's a legend. They should just be all fighting each other in a 50-year-old and over league. I don't care. Hell, put it on a UFC one night. Put it on Fight Pass. It doesn't even matter. But Machida now gets another huge signature knockout victory. What's next for Machida? Well, he called out Michael Bisping. That would have been a great fight to see. Him and Michael Bisping have been two of the journeymen through the league. Lyoto Machida's fought everybody. Michael Bisping's fought everybody. But the news broke that Michael Bisping has officially retired. Yes, he said his eyes are just too damn bad now. I thought it was a dumb move for him to take that Kevin Gastelum fight on short notice in China on Fight Pass that no one was even watching after he got dropped by GSP. Yes, I know on the UFC website it says, oh, Michael Bisping submitted by George St. Pierre, but he was dropped. He almost got TKO'd. George was just smart enough to see him turn and try to get to his feet, and he took his back, but that's getting past the point. Michael Bisping, as much as I hated you also throughout your career, I got to show a little bit of respect because Michael Bisping was always down to fight. He was always a game opponent, and left hook Larry could catch anybody. Once again, just ask Luke Rockhold. But let's go ahead and stop talking about Rockhold getting knocked out by these OGs that are retiring from the game. And let's talk about 224, and let's talk about the man that Michael Bisping got knocked out from and actually got retired by. And that's Kevin Gastelum, who took on Jacare Souza, in which was no doubt in my mind fight of the night. I called it on Twitter before. I said this is going to be the fight of the night. I was mad that this was going to be three rounds. I much would have rather see that as a five-round fight than Raquel Pennington versus Amanda Nunes, because Jacare and Gastelum were going back and forth. Jacare got Gastelum in full mount in the first round. Gastelum was able to survive and then just push the pace against Jacare, and Jacare looked a little gassed. Kevin Gastelum looked great, came back, got the win, and now he wants the middleweight title shot. Yes, will he get Robert Whittaker? We shall see. We shall see. There's not too many contenders left in the middleweight division. There's basically him or Chris Weidman, and Chris Weidman just beat Kevin Gastelum in his last fight, so that's kind of a toss-up, but we'll get more into that middleweight division as we discuss Romero versus Robert Whittaker as we talk about UFC 225, but let's stick to this UFC 224 card. Also making her second fight on this card was Mackenzie Dern. There has been a lot of hype on Mackenzie Dern. Hell, I've tweeted about her a bunch, probably more than half the female MMA roster in the UFC, but it comes with good marriage. She's got the hype machine. She's one of the greatest female jiu-jitsu players in the world. Hell, she beat Gabby Garcia, the woman, the myth, the legend. No one takes down Gabby Garcia. I don't care if it's a tech, whatever. If you beat Gabby Garcia, you beat Gabby Garcia. No weight classes, and I'll tell you, if she's got the balls to go take out Gabby Garcia, I don't think she's afraid to fight anybody in the UFC, because Mackenzie Dern, she came out this fight versus ABC, Amanda Beth Cooper. Amanda Beth Cooper does have some good striking, some good boxing, but Mackenzie Dern picked her apart. Yes, Mackenzie Dern, the jiu-jitsu specialist, threw an overhand right that straight cleaned ABC's clock. It was like Jackson 5 got hit five times. ABC, it's easy as 1, 2, 3. Mackenzie drops her, takes her back, submits her, gets a rear naked choke, puts her to sleep, and it's over. Mackenzie Dern had a fantastic second showing, if you don't want to talk about what happened before the fight, because Mackenzie Dern, unfortunately, missed weight by 7 pounds. Yes, 7 pounds. That's a whole nother weight class. She's supposed to be fighting at 115. She was damn near 125 at the weigh-in. How the fuck does that happen? I'm pretty sure they have weigh-ins in jiu-jitsu competitions. There are weight classes, or maybe she's just used to fighting people like Gabby Garcia, where she said, hey, fuck a weight class, I'm gonna come in here and scrap. And there was a very interesting theory that came out after this, that Dominic Cruz said that UFC fighters are now purposely missing weight to have an advantage in the fight, because if you're only losing a percentage of your paycheck, hell, if you win the fight, you're probably going to get a bigger contract the next paycheck. If that makes sense, the more fights you win, the bigger contract you have. Do everything you can to win. Hell, we saw before UFC Liverpool, overweight fighters were 6-0. The only one who lost this year is Molly Meatball over there from London and Liverpool, but she was making her UFC debut. We saw Darren Till miss weight, and then he beats Wonderboy Thompson, but we'll get into that when we get into that. It's ridiculous that this is now being even talked about as some type of strategy. But it is what it is. Honestly, the UFC has been up and down with their weigh-ins. Now they want to move the weigh-in time from in the morning to back in the afternoon because too many people are missing weights, even though the fighters say it gives them more recovery time and it's better for the body. Who knows what the hell was going on, but Mackenzie Dern, get your shit together. You're one of the biggest female prospects since Ronda Rousey. I'll go ahead and say it. But you gotta get your shit together. You gotta make weight. You gotta be professional. So I look forward to the future of Mackenzie Dern's career. But honestly, if she doesn't start losing weight, because she's got weight to lose, I don't want to sound like an asshole criticizing, saying she's got love handles or whatever. But I'll say the same thing about Kevin Gastelum. Kevin Gastelum's got love handles, but no one's going to call me out for being sexist, talking about his little chub he's got down there. Mackenzie Dern can afford to lose a few extra pounds. She can improve her physique to get down to 115 because she's very short. She's not tall enough to fight at 125 or 135. So her best weight class is 115. But like I said, we'll see what happens. We talked about Kevin Gastelum from this card, making weight, missing weight. Amanda Nunes is also another competitor that has been dealing with weight issues in the past. She is, as you know, the 135 champion. She has fought at 145 before. She comes into this championship fight versus Raquel Rocky Pennington, and she looked like one of those Rocky movies where Rocky was just getting the shit beat out of him, because Amanda Nunes, the lioness, put it on Rocky for 4 straight rounds. Rocky didn't win a round, and you want to know how I know she didn't win a round? Because she comes back to her corner after round 4 and says, "I'm done. That's it." And her corner goes, no, you're fine. You can still win this. Tell me, as a corner man, at what point during the fight did she show any sign of life, show any sign of significant strikes, show that she was even had a chance in this fight, because she was getting absolutely dominated? Guess what? She goes out into the 5th round, gets TK'd old, gets her nose split open by Amanda. She's leaking all over the mat. The refs stop it, and her cornermen look like a bunch of idiots. This has caused a lot of controversy in the MMA community. What should coaches do? Should they throw in the towel more? Hell, I've seen it firsthand experience from when GSP versus BJ Penn and BJ Penn's corner threw in the corner. We've seen Trevor Whitman, one of the best coaches in MMA, throw in the towel a couple times for his fighters, but no, they sent her back out there. Raquel did say that she trusts her coaches, and you know, we don't know the full relationship. Sometimes a fighter might break during practice and a coach might have to get on him and say, "No, you can still do this." And that's the extra motivation. Hell, maybe that's what she wanted. She's trying to stand up and defend her coach. No one really knows that call unless they're in her shoes. But you got to think, after 4 rounds of just getting your ass beat, her knee was messed up. She messed it up in the first round. I thought it was a poor decision to let Raquel Pennington keep going out there. Hell, I thought this was a poor decision to let this fight happen. I thought maybe it could have been a close fight like a year ago or so when Rocky was hot, coming off a lot of fights. But then she had an ATV accident, some freak accident. She was out for like over a year and a half, long layoff. Then she wants to come back and try to fight Amanda. Good luck with that. But hey, we'll see what's next for Amanda Nunes. Let's get into the future matchmaking skills here. Hunt, call up Sean Shelby. What's up, my dude? The big rumors are Amanda Nunes versus Chris Cyborg. Are we finally going to get the super fight? People will say Amanda doesn't want to fight a fellow Brazilian. Cyborg's like, fuck it, at this point, I'll fight whoever. Put her in the cage. People say Amanda needs time to get bigger. As I said, Amanda has fought at 145 before. But now the latest revelations, we'll tie it into UFC 225. Get our first talk about here. Holly Holm versus Megan Anderson. If you don't know Megan Anderson, she was the Invicta 145-pound champion. She came over. She was supposed to fight Cyborg, I believe, last year. Had some visa issues, might have had some pregnancy issues, I don't know. She never really came out and talked about it in full. So now she finally makes her UFC debut, gets to match up with Holly Holm, the preacher's daughter. And let me say, this was an interesting matchup, because this was the first time in Holly Holm's career that I believe she's actually fought someone that has a noticeable size advantage against her. Yes, we know Cyborg's probably stronger than her. They're both pretty built, around the same height. Megan Anderson is taller than Holly Holm. She's longer than Holly Holm, and she can strike. Hell, she won her last 5 fights all with 5 first round knockouts, 5 broken orbital bones, and Megan Anderson came out and she was throwing some combos. She was pressing Holly, and she looked good that first round until Holly Holm made an adjustment later in that fight and said, "Hey, Megan, there are levels to this shit." We all know Holly Holm as a kickboxer, boxer, phenomenal striker. She used her wrestling to just straight dominate Megan Anderson. She said, "Hey, let me show you a little bit of veteran savagery right here and go to my wrestling background." Holly Holm had 4 takedowns, had control of Megan Anderson on the ground for over 10 minutes, and just truly a fantastic performance by Holly Holm to just straight go out there and, like I said, just out veteran a rookie. This was the highest level of competition Megan Anderson has faced, and it showed, because Holly looked great. And then after the fight, Holly Holm said she still never got over her loss to Misha Tate at the 135 division. She still wants that 135 belt. And then we got Amanda Nunes calling out Holly Holm. This is the matchup I've wanted for so long at 135. The two females that knocked out Ronda Rousey. Yes, we will have the Ronda Rousey Super Bowl, whatever you want to call it. Hell, put Ronda's head on sacrifice next to the ring. Let him fight. Let him get it down. Let him scrap. I want to see this fight. I'm excited for this fight. And even Chris Cyborg said she endorses this fight, because if she's got no one to fight next, why not let two girls set up a true super fight? This way, there will be two belts on the line. If Holly Holm wins, then Holly versus Cyborg rematch makes sense. If Amanda beats Holly, then all the hype train is there because Holly Holm is the only person who's lasted five rounds against Chris Cyborg. And according to a couple judges, actually won a couple rounds against Chris Cyborg. But Amanda Nunes versus Chris Cyborg seems like the fight to make. But to get there, I definitely want to see Amanda Nunes versus Holly Holm. Winner gets Chris Cyborg. I think that's the perfect setup right there for the UFC. And if they don't do that, then I don't know what the hell the UFC is doing. But, hey, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. That might be the biggest fight in female history for the UFC, Cyborg versus either Amanda Nunes or even Holly Holm, the rematch. I thought the fight between Cyborg and Holly Holm was already the biggest fight in women's history. But Ronda Rousey wasn't in it, so no one really cared. But let me just say this. If we're going to talk about UFC 225, we're going to talk about Holly Holm, we're talking about Cyborg. I already mentioned Rousey's name a few times. I don't like to ever mention her on the podcast. But let me just complain about what I wanted to complain about for UFC 225, besides the whole CM Punk fight. I'll get into that later. Ronda Rousey had a whole fucking introductory ceremony where it took fucking 15, 20 minutes in the first hour of the pay-per-view, which made me pissed off because I had to work an overnight shift, so I had to leave by 10:30. And what do you know? Yoel Romero Whitaker was still on at 10:30 because of this goddamn Ronda Rousey Hall of Fame ceremony, which I understand, people. She did do a lot for the sport, blah, blah, blah. She was a champion where there's not too great of competition. And yeah, she deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, but not this soon. Not this quick. Not when people like the Shamrock Brothers are in the UFC Hall of Fame. It makes no sense to me. I mean, I understand what she did for the sport, the brand appeal. She was a cute little blonde girl. She got little girls to watch fighting. She got moms watch fighting, blah, blah, blah. But I'm just so sick of this revisionist history of talking about, oh, she was the greatest ever. She was a pioneer. She was the first female. No. Let me stop you there. Chris Cyborg is the pioneer of women's female MMA. You want to know why? Because back in 2009, before I even knew who Ronda Rousey was, Gina Carano versus Chris Cyborg, August 2009, HP Pavilion, Strikeforce main event. Yes, two females were in the main event of an MMA promotion before female MMA was even in the UFC. So before I even knew who the hell Ronda Rousey was, I was watching Cyborg versus Gina Carano. Hell, I watched Cyborg 2-3 times in Strikeforce back in 09, 2010. Man, oh man, the amounts of disrespect. Joe Rogan, my favorite podcaster, my favorite commentary guy of all time, but there was nothing I disagreed more when he would just hype the shit out of Ronda Rousey saying, once in a lifetime, she could beat Floyd Mayweather. She can do this, she could do that. She didn't do nothing except for get kicked in the head by Holly Holm and then get manhandled by Amanda Nunes. So screw Ronda Rousey. I'm sorry, I'm gonna say it one more time. Forget about her. Give me Amanda Nunes versus Holly Holm to set up the Cyborg super fight. And then I want all three of those ladies to be joining Ronda Rousey in the women's section of the UFC Hall of Fame. But I digress because I don't want to get in too big of a rant about Ronda Rousey and all the things I hated this weekend about 225 because it was a great event. But the Ronda Rousey introduction, blah, 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 and the CM Punk fight. Hell, shit, I'll just get into it right now. We're going to go straight from the 224 to 225. I'll sprinkle in Fight Night Chile and Fight Night Liverpool in here somewhere, but I'm already getting on the rant. CM Punk versus Michael Jackson. Yes, Michael Jackson was fighting CM Punk, and it was the worst performance, worst fight, worst sporting event in UFC history, I guess you could say, but it was truly pathetic. It was an 0-1 amateur versus an 0-1 amateur. And literally the only thing they had in common was they both lost to Mickey Gall. And the only thing more embarrassing than CM Punk's lost to Mickey Gall was maybe Michael Jackson's loss to Mickey Gall. So, I mean, this was just truly terrible. I don't know why it was on pay-per-view. I mean, obviously, CM Punk, the name from wrestling, I guess he can sell some tickets, sell some pay-per-views in his hometown of Chicago. But, man, we saw his first fight. The second fight, he lasted 15 minutes longer, but it was just 15 minutes of pain and suffering. He did land one takedown, but Mike Jackson was just picking him apart, kind of showboating. He said he was looking for the knockout in round one and then kind of just laid on him for 10 minutes after that.
He said CM Punk was dangerous, so he didn't want to force the knockout. I don't know what the fuck he was talking about. And apparently Dana White didn't know what the fuck he was talking about because he said the guy's an idiot. He's a jackass. He'll never fight in the UFC again. That was embarrassing. That should have been a Fight Pass fight. Yes, it should have been on Fight Pass, not even Fox prelims. Put that shit on Fight Pass. Make the WWE fans all pay for it, $5 a month, whatever. It doesn't even matter. I don't want to talk about this fight, but hey, it was a big event. Everybody wants to talk about the WWE wrestlers. I'd rather talk about NFL players. Greg Hardy. Greg Hardy was just on Dana White Tuesday Night Contenders. We saw him get a flash knockout. Give me more NFL players and less WWE players. Hell, my favorite season of The Ultimate Fighter was season 10 when Rashard Evans and Rampage Jackson coached. They had Kimbo, Matt Mitrione, Brandon Schaub, a bunch of NFL guys on. Give me some NFL talent in the UFC heavyweight division and hey, I'll be happy about it. But man, oh man, what a bad way, what a sour note to kick off UFC 225. God damn, CM Punk, I don't want to see a return from you. I don't want to see a return from Michael Jackson, and I don't want to talk about it no more on this podcast. So we're going to go ahead and move on. We talked about Holly Holm versus Megan Anderson. Also on this fight, we had Megan Anderson, Robert Whittaker, and Ty Tuivasa. It was the Australian takeover. Ty Tuivasa, you might know him from popping out a couple of shoeies. If you don't know what a shoeie is, you're not from down under. It's when you fill up your shoe full of beer, get your closest mates to come in. Hock a loogie in it, and then chug that shit to the face. Ty Tuivasa has been doing it after all of his fights, shaking them titties. He got his first real test this weekend versus Andrei Arlovski. And I'll tell you what, Andrei Arlovski looked great. For all these UFC vets that were losing earlier in the night, Rashad Evans got knocked out. It was, God, it was terrible to see. It was really rough to watch. We saw Alistair Overeem get fucking mauled to death by Curtis Blaydes. You want to talk about those elbows? Oh, man, that was just straight brutal. Curtis' razor blades literally looked like he had razors on the end of his elbows. He went 4, 5, 6 in a row over the top to Alistair Overeem, and he was done once again. So on a night where we saw all these UFC veterans getting knocked out and losing, Andrei Arlovski put up a fucking fight versus a dangerous Ty Tuivasa. Ty Tuivasa is only 25 years old, has been training with Mark Hunt forever, so you know he's got a goddamn chin and he can swing him and bang him. But man, this was a back and forth. Ty Tuivasa ended up getting the W over Arlovski, but Arlovski looked good. I want to see him come back. Everybody talks about getting these old veteran guys pushed out the UFC, but I think he'll be the heavyweight gatekeeper for a couple more years because he can still fight, and he's still got a fucking jaw. Man, some of the shots they took that fight were incredible, but let's go ahead and move on now to the co-main event of the evening. Let's get into this welterweight division and all these fights that have been going down. We'll go ahead and start with this interim title fight. I've said it before, I mentioned it on the last podcast, I've tweeted about it. This was the most worthless interim belt I've ever seen in my life. Like, honestly, Tyron Woodley was super active last year. He's been pretty active as a champion. He did have surgery on his shoulder, but he's coming back. He said, what, next month, August? We're a month or two away from the return of Tyron Woodley, and they had an interim title fight? I don't understand it, but Colby Covington has talked his way into a championship fight. He talked it into his way with RDA, and now he's finally talked himself to Tyron Woodley. I mentioned it before. I'd rather have had Wonderboy versus Darren Till be the title fight, but we all know what happened there. Darren Till didn't even make weight, so that would have been a catastrophe once again. That Darren Till versus Stephen Thompson fight, I'll touch on that real quick before we get into RDA Covington, because Covington's going to lead right into Tyron Woodley, obviously. But let's talk about the rest of this welterweight division in that fight night. Liverpool, Wonderboy versus Darren Till. I actually scored that fight for Wonderboy. I thought he took rounds 1, 3, 4, while Darren Till was more impressive in round 2. And then the most significant strike of the fight was when he dropped Wonderboy in round 5. Yeah, it could have gone back and forth. Maybe you give him a 10-8 round late. I don't even think so there. I thought it was more the Liverpoolian judges who were given the hype and given the influence to Darren Till, because every time he was throwing a punch, it was getting wild reactions from the crowd. While Wonderboy was all defense, 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 counterfighter, counterfighter, which we all know that's what Wonderboy's going to do. We saw him against Rory McDonald, counter him, counter him, counter him. Against Woodley, people have complained about those fights were boring, but that's the style you're going to get against Wonderboy, and it kind of reminds me of Anderson Silva. Like when he lost to Michael Bisping, he didn't really do nothing. It was just defense, defense, defense. knocked him out, but was saved by the bell. And then Michael Bisping just went on points just by pressuring and pressuring and pressuring him. That's how I kind of feel about Wonderboy's performances lately. He's been real great defensively, but then gets caught just randomly at the end of the fight, or he doesn't do enough. He doesn't let his hands go. That's been the main criticism with Wonderboy. He's, this is the time I'll finally let my hands go, but the only hands going back and forth were dabbing up and hugs because there was almost too much respect shown in this fight, but this was a fight I didn't want to see. I don't know why they crossed paths. Darren Till has said, hey, if you think the judging was unfair because we're in London, or if you've got problems with me missing weight, I'm down to do a rematch in Las Vegas, in America. That would be great to see. Wonderboy has kind of moved on, said he wants Robbie Lawler. I think that would be a good matchup. Hell, I'd like to see Robbie Lawler versus Darren Till, or I'd even like to see Darren Till or Wonderboy versus RDA, because RDA, after this past weekend, lost to Colby Covington. So now Colby Covington, the interim title winner, will face Tyron Woodley. But for the rest of that welterweight division, I really think there's three guys who are the up-and-comers. Obviously, Colby Covington has the belt now. Darren Till, who I just talked about. And then Kamaru Usman, who had a big fight against Damian Maia in Fight Night Chile. Was supposed to fight Santiago Ponzinibbia. But as always, injuries or something have to happen to a card. But hey, Damian Maia comes in on short notice, but I don't know if this was the greatest move for Damian Maia. I mean, he hasn't looked like the same Damian Maia ever since he lost to Woodley, lost to Covington, and now he's lost to Usman. He's now, what, 0-49, I think was the stat I saw in his last three fights, and trying to get takedowns. He's not taking anybody down, and when a one-dimensional fighter who relies on his jiu-jitsu, let's be honest, can't get you down to the ground, it's pretty hard to win a fight. Usman did win pretty impressively. It wasn't dominant by any means. He actually said he came out and broke both his hands after the fight. I don't know if that's the truth or not. I don't know if he's pulling a LeBron James and saying he's got a broken hand after the fact, but he won the fight. He didn't even lose, but you come out and say you got broken hands. The last fight you came out and said you're only fighting with 30%. Kamaru Usman, I think he's got a great skill set. He's a great wrestler, but he's not giving himself any help with the fans right now. He's not buying any love with all these excuses and kind of these lackluster performances that he's been going out and having these past couple fights. The talent is there, but he's got to make a statement. He tried to make a statement after the fight because he's still an undefeated fighter, called out Tyron Woodley, but now Woodley is going to go through Covington. I would love to see Usman versus Covington because they have some history there between the two of them, because they've gone back. They used to train together also. All these guys from AT&T want to fight each other now. It's pretty funny. But at the end of the day, he's still got to go up a few more notches in that welterweight ranking to get there. Hell, I would love to see Usman versus Covington, like I said, but now Covington is definitely going to get that Woodley fight because Woodley is finally acknowledging Covington. He didn't even want to talk about the guy at all until he finally got some clout on his name. He's been calling him a clout chaser, blah, blah, blah. Well, Covington finally got all the clout he needed this past weekend, and that's with the championship belt. He took the W from RDA. I agree with most judges. I saw Covington 3-2. I had it 2-2 going into the fifth round. Some judges had it Covington dominating the first four. I heard people say RDA won the first four. I think definitely RDA won the fourth round, but that's about it. He out-wrestled Colby in that round, but Covington, he had a great pace. His stand-up looks all right, but it's definitely his wrestling that's his bread and butter. He just pushed a mean pace on RDA the entire fight and was just landing, and he was smothering him. And then once he finally got his chance to talk on the mic, you know Colby Covington was going to have to say something. As cringeworthy as he is, you got to give the guy his credit for his shtick, whatever he's trying to do with the Make America Great Again, trying to hop on the Trump train, borderline racist stuff he's saying. The man is getting attention, trying to pull a Chael Sonnen 2.0. I don't think he's anywhere as charismatic as Chael Sonnen, but hey, Colby Covington is talking his shit. He got his championship belt, and now he's going to finally get Tyron Woodley, and this was the message that he had for Tyron Woodley after winning the UFC welterweight interim belt at UFC 225.
The judges score the contest 49-46, 48-47, and 48-47 for the winner by unanimous decision. And now, the new interim UFC welterweight champion, Colby Chaos
Covington! Welterweight champion Colby Covington. How does that sound?
First off, Joe Rogan, all I want to say is this is a real championship belt. I'm gonna do what a real American should do. I'm bringing this belt to the White House and I'm putting it on Donald Trump's desk. And secondly, Joe, Tyrone Woodley, you're a freaking coward. Why'd you let this little filthy animal take this ass whooping tonight? This is supposed to be you. You can't run. You can't hide no more, Tyrone Woodley. I'm coming for you. Let me say this, the real championship belt, Tyrone Woodley. If you got something to say, come see me.
Tyrone Woodley, if you got something to say, come see me, bitch. Wow, what words from Colby Covington after the fight, but it's honestly not that surprising. He's been calling out Woodley for days and weeks and months and years, it seems like, calling him Tyrone Woodley, calling him Ty-Z, the Nycro Woodley, because he puts all his fans to sleep when he's watching the fight. He's been calling him out for days and days and said, hey, T-Wood, you got something? Come find me, bitch. And hey, Woodley, what do you know? He finally responds. He was going on a whole campaign of, I'm not going to say anything about Colby Covington. I don't even want to mention his name. He doesn't deserve to be in the same sentence as me. But Woodley, what are you doing? You should be embracing this. You hear those boos for Colby Covington? Everybody hates him. He's in America, and they're cheering for a bazillion to whoop his ass. Everybody hates this guy for the first time in your life, T-Wood. You can be the good guy. Woodley, for years and years and years, has just complained that, oh, the UFC fans don't like me. Why don't I get the money fights? I think the fans are racist because they don't like me because I'm black, even though DC, John Jones, Anderson Silva are three of the most popular people ever in this sport. Everybody was just getting sick of Woodley just bitching and crying and trying to cherry-pick his opponent to now possibly getting all the fans on his side. This is a fight that fans actually want to see T-Wood beat the shit out of Colby Covington, no matter what race, what country, no matter where you're from. Nobody likes Colby Covington. He's a troll. He literally trolls people about Star Wars spoilers. Hell, he trolled Fabricio Werdum so badly that Werdum threw a boomerang at him, and then he called the cops. Hell, start calling him call the Coppingtons, because man, oh man, nobody likes this guy Colby Covington, and T-Wood, without a doubt in my mind, should absolutely melt him when they fight. He's calling him out for that November card in Madison Square Garden. There's not one thing that Colby Covington should be able to do better than Tyrone Woodley besides maybe his cardio. If that's it, that's been the one criticism for T. Woodley. But T. Woodley, he's a better wrestler. He's a better striker. He's got more power. I definitely think Tyrone Woodley should be able to walk through Colby Covington. But the one thing we don't know is, how is Colby Covington's chin? Can he take a shot from T. Wood? Because if he doesn't, I think with that pressure, with that pace, Colby Covington doesn't stop for five straight rounds. We just saw him versus RTA. He was nothing but pressure, pressure, pressure. And hey, if there's one way to beat Tyrone Woodley, it's to outwork him without getting hurt. Hell, we saw Wonderboy versus Woodley. Wonderboy tried his best not to get hurt and to outwork him, but he obviously didn't work. It was just counter, counter, counter. I think Colby Covington's going to put his head down, going to put his head right in the chest, try to take Woodley down, obviously. I don't know if he can, but if Woodley does not finish him, this could be a close fight on the scorecard. I just want to say, George St. Pierre was on Joe Rogan's podcast a couple weeks ago, said that he thinks if Nick Diaz was fighting right now, yes, Nick Diaz did get reinstated to fight in the UFC. The news was that broke that he's having some domestic violence issues with his girlfriend, with some stalker. I don't know the full story. It's sad to see, because Nick Diaz could still be fighting the UFC today, and that's what GSP was talking about. He said, people are going to laugh at me, but I really do think Nick Diaz could beat Tyrone Woodley. You want to know why? Because Nick Diaz has a fucking chin. You want to talk about legendary chins? You want to talk about the Diaz brothers. And he's got that pace where he's going to keep going at you for five rounds nonstop, put on that marathon pace on you. So if Colby Covington can take a page out of the Diaz brothers' books, like I said, I don't know Colby's chin. He's only got one loss. He got submitted, but I don't know his chin too well. He's a wrestler, but if he can push the pace against T-Wood, this will be an interesting fight. But hell, it's going to be an interesting fight just because all the shit talking. Yes, I know it's all a shtick. I don't even know if it's all real, but Colby Covington, and as much as I hate to say it, it's kind of entertaining to watch, because the only thing better than watching a fight between two people is watching a fight between two people that hate each other. Yes, I know you all remember those old schoolyard fights where, hey, he tried to fuck my girlfriend. He tried to do this. He tried to do that. And the people legitimately hated each other. Those always made the best fights. And so when two guys in the UFC actually hate each other, hell, we've seen it with TJ Dillashaw, Cody Garbrandt. They're about to run that shit back in LA in a couple months coming up in August. When guys hate each other, I just want to see this fight so badly now. And like I said, Tyron Woodley, he should be embracing this fight without a doubt, because he finally gets to be the good guy. He finally gets to get fans on his side, because like I said, nobody wants to see Colby Covington as the actual champion. He became a champion by beating RDA. No disrespect to RDA. He has looked a lot better since coming up to 170, but ever since he got ragdolled by Khabib at 155, that was the end of the RDA for me. The champion RDA was great. Yeah, I remember RDA fucking kicked the shit out of Nate Diaz's legs and damn near turned him into a cripple. But once Khabib got his hands onto him, I knew it was done. That's why I figured Colby would win this fight, just because of that wrestling background. RDA did look better in his wrestling, did improve, did have a takedown, like I said, in that fourth round. But at the end of the day, we'll have a wrestler versus a wrestler. Woodley versus Covington. AT&T versus AT&T. The battle for Dan Lambert's hearts. Man, oh man, what a matchup that is going to be. But before we start looking ahead of time, before we start breaking down UFC 226, I mentioned TJ Dillashaw versus Cody Garbrandt, UFC 227. We got to talk about the biggest fight of the year so far, Yoel Romero versus Robert Whittaker 2 at UFC 225. We're 40 minutes into this podcast, and we're now just getting to the main event. And man, oh man, like I said earlier in the podcast, you want to talk about fight of the night, fight of the year, hell, maybe one of the greatest middleweight fights of all time, Yoel Romero versus Robert Whittaker, part two, live in Chicago, Illinois.
Robert Whittaker defending his 185-pound title against Yoel Romero, a rematch. Robert Whittaker is one of the best strikers in the UFC's talent-stacked middleweight division. Legitimate one-strike knockout power. Robert Whittaker is one of the guys, I think, who came in kind of under the radar at 185. He woke everybody up when he dominated Jacare.
Massive head kick for Whittaker, follows it up with a straight right. Oh, Whittaker pulling it all now, and that is it.
And then he took the title from Yoel Romero and tactically, physically dominated that fight. Yoel Romero started out strong, but he faded late in the fight and lost the decision.
And new middleweight champion of the world.
Tough fight, but his ability to pace himself wasn't there. And that's the kind of fight you go back to the gym and go, look, you didn't get beat up, you didn't get hurt, we can fix this.
Y aprendí mucho después de la pelea con Robert Whittaker, que cuando se está ganando, ve y destruye. No des chance, no des más a que el oponente.
Yoel Romero not only does he have an incredible international wrestling pedigree, he loves to strike. He can look relaxed, like he's not paying attention, and then bam.
Flying knee, he knocked him out.
40 years old and moves like a guy that's half his age. Really quick hands and devastating power that could knock your lights out.
Oh! That's Romero it. With a knockdown! Yoel Romero has done it! Romero knocks Luke Rockhold out cold!
Coming off his knockout win over Luke Rockhold, Yoel Romero is full of confidence right now.
En llevar mi cinturón, mi encomienda, es lo que tengo dentro de mí. Creo que sé que voy a ser campeón.
I'm going to send the message that I'm going to be one of the best ever. This is the best I've ever looked. And I'm going to go in there and put on the best show of my career. It's going to be a 25-minute war.
A 25-minute war was exactly what we got Saturday night from UFC 225 live in Chicago. The rematch, Yoel, the Soldier of God Romero versus the Reaper, a.k.a. Bobby Knuckles, Robert Whittaker. oh man, part two was even better than the first one. I don't know how, because that first fight was a fantastic fight that went 25 minutes, but this second one even topped that. I said it. You want to talk about fight of the week, fight of the night, fight of the goddamn year? You want to talk about round of the year? Maybe one of the best rounds I've ever seen in my life. Go check out round three of Yoel Romero versus Robert Whittaker. This fight was absolutely fantastic, and man, oh man, there was a little bit of controversy on the decision. Some people say Yoel won, some people say Robert won. But man, oh man, how could you just not be satisfied with the outcome of that fight? Two men leaving it all on the line. I'm a huge Robert Whittaker fan, and I'm a huge Yoel fan. The Soldier of God, I think, in my opinion, might be one of the greatest fighters ever to never wear that UFC championship belt. And sadly, we don't know if we'll get another chance, because now Whittaker has won the first two fights by split decision in both of them. I thought it was an interesting strategy by Yoel Romero. We saw in the first fight, he came out, won the first two rounds, but then was gassed. Lost rounds 3, 4, and 5. This fight, he took a completely different approach. I thought it was genius. He took a page out of Tyron Woodley's book, where he did just conserve energy, conserve energy. He went for the back half of this fight. It was more defense, defense the first two rounds, and easily got outworked by Robert Whittaker. But when rounds 3, 4, and 5 came around, Yoel turned it on and made Whittaker pay. I want to say Bobby fucking Knuckles. What a savage. That third round when he got dropped, I don't know how he didn't get finished. The man has got heart. He's got a goddamn chin. Hell, the first fight, he tore his ACL in the first round. This fight, he broke his hand in the first round and was still able to survive in there against Yoel Romero. Robert even said after the fight, this is the boogeyman of the division, and now I've fought twice back-to-back and have won by decision. Man, oh man, I want to see this fight again. But hey, let's talk about the second one before we get to the third one. As I mentioned, that third round was a round for the ages. If you want to watch one round, if you got 5 minutes to kill, if you're taking a shit, you got 5 minutes, you want to watch something, look up this third round. I'm telling you, Yoel Romero drops him early. He's picking him apart, trying to finish him, gets him down to the ground. Whittaker scrambles back up. At the end of the round, Whittaker lands a head kick that rocks Yoel. Yoel eats it, keeps moving forward. I mean, I talked about Robert Whittaker's chin. How about Yoel Romero? The shots that he's able to take, the big ass traps, the neck. Hell, he's broken his neck before. The man's 41 years old. 41 and is fighting for a title belt. He was just an absolute freak. He broke his neck before, and the doctor said if it was anybody else, you might be dead. You got so much muscle and so much thick skin around your neck and your traps that you're one of the few people who can actually survive that. The doctor told him never to fight again, and here he is, the Soldier of God, put on an absolute show. I gave him the third rounds and the fifth round, absolutely, hands down, no doubt about it. The fifth round, he drops him again, almost finishes the fight, and Robert was hanging in there for dear life. But that fourth round is the main round of controversy. Some people give it to Yoel, some people give it to Robert Whittaker. I think by the numbers, Yoel might have did a little bit more damage, but Robert Whittaker definitely outworked him with the pace and the strikes and the amount of strikes that he landed. But even so, I gotta go back to that fifth round where Yoel completely dominated. That was for sure, in my mind, a 10-8 round. I don't know how you can't give him a 10-8 round for that one. So in my scorebooks, even if you only give rounds 3 and round 5 to Yoel, one of those rounds got to be a 10-8. Definitely, in my opinion, round 5 should have been a 10-8. So we should have been, at the minimum, a draw. Now, Yoel said that he won round 3, 4, 5. Actually, one of the judges gave him rounds 3, 4, and 5. It was a split decision, like I mentioned. But man, oh man, you cannot sit here with a straight face and tell me that the same way that Robert Whittaker won the first two rounds was in any way as significant as the way that Yoel Romero won that last round. And this is supposed to be with the new rules too, so that there's supposed to be more 10-8 rounds. I don't get it. In my opinion, it should be a 10-9 round when it's close, but when it's as dominant, when a guy gets dropped, in boxing, when a guy gets dropped, it's an automatic 10-8 round. It's not like that in the UFC. There's so many things that come into factoring. I don't know why we judge the sport like boxing anyways. I like the old pride rules better, where you judge the fight on the whole entire fight. But man, oh man, I thought Yoel did get screwed out of a 10-8 round at the end. And at the very least, it should have been a draw to set up a third one, because we all heard what happened before. Yoel Romero missed weight, missed championship weight by only 0.2 pounds. He was devastated. He's now missed championship weight back-to-back fights, which you don't expect Yoel Romero to do, being a former wrestler. Hell, he was a silver medalist in the Olympics. He's wrestled against Daniel Cormier. Wrestlers don't miss weight. They're usually on point for the weight cut. He said he ran out of time with the commission. They cut his extra 2 hours short. I heard his coaches on the MMA hour. They were planning to use the last 2 hours. I thought that was kind of a dumb strategy. You're cutting a little bit close there. I know you want to use all the time you have, but this is another reason why weigh-ins are going back to 4 o'clock instead of 8 o'clock in the morning. Blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, I want to see Yoel Romero versus Robert Whittaker, part 3. Joe Rogan got in there in the octagon and said, "Hey, Robert, you want the rubber match?" And the Aussie had no idea what the hell a rubber match even was. Even though technically, Joe Rogan, a rubber match is when it's 1-1. But shit, man, I still want to see DC versus John Jones again. Hell, set that up for a third time once Johnny Bones comes back. I would love to see Romero versus Robert Whittaker, especially because it's been two split decision fights. It's been two close-ass fights. Yoel arguably could have won both of those fights, depending on who's judging it. I definitely think he either won or earned a draw in that last fight, but we'll see what happens now, because Robert Whittaker, he doesn't sound too keen on fighting Yoel Romero again. Like I mentioned, he said, "I had to go through the boogeyman of this division twice, and now you want me to fight him a third time?" We'll see who's next, because there's not too many contenders right now in the middleweight division, to be honest with you. I mentioned earlier Kevin Gastelum got the win over Jacare at UFC 224. He could be next in line, but the only other guy he's got competition with, it seems like, is Chris Weidman, which I don't really understand, because Chris Weidman's lost 3 of his last 4 fights. But the one that he won was Kevin Gastelum. So we're over here doing MMA math, trying to figure out who's going to be next to take on Robert Whittaker. Obviously, Luke Rockhold got knocked out. He don't deserve it. He was supposed to fight Whittaker. I don't think Weidman really deserves it, losing 3 of his last 4. If anything, Gastelum probably deserves it the most. But then how do you justify giving it to him over Chris Weidman? I don't know. This MMA math is all over the place. I'd love to see Gastelum versus Robert Whittaker, the former welterweights battling it out for the 185-pound championship. We'll see if Yoel, it just straight sits out until he gets his third rematch. But I think it's hard, especially when on paper, if you just look at it, Whittaker is up 2-0. So like DC Jones, what does he got to do to get the rematch? He's got to get the belt a different way. He's got to go on a streak. He's got to do something. So maybe he set up Yoel versus Kevin Gastelum, because we already saw what happened versus Yoel versus Chris Weidman, unless he wants to run that back. But his head got split open so badly, I don't think he ever wants to even watch that fight again. So we'll see what happens. You know, I'd like to see Gastelum versus Weidman. Why not run that back? I think Weidman had the advantage with obviously the strength, the length, the takedown ability, but I think Gastelum might be able to stay on the outside this time. Who knows? Maybe he can make an adjustment. I don't know, but to be honest with you, I have no problem watching Whittaker versus Romero. Fuck, I'll watch that shit 5-6 more times. I don't care. I keep on fighting until Yoel retires. He's 41, the soldier of God. Like I said, one of the best fighters ever to not have that UFC gold, but it's only a matter of time. It's only a matter of time. But that's it, folks. That's the UFC 225 Aftermath podcast right here on the Bay's Golden Days. We finished it up with UFC 225. We talked about Whittaker winning the belt from Yoel. What's his next matchups? Covington taking the interim belt. Him versus Woodley. We'll see what happens with the rest of the welterweight division with Wonderboy, RDA, Robbie Lawler, Kamaru Usman. A lot of talent there. It's always been one of the top talented divisions in the UFC. Hell, we talked about Michael Bisping retired. We talked about Nick Diaz being forced to retire, I guess, if you even want to say that. We got GSP. We talked about the Joe Rogan podcast a little bit. He dropped some hints that he's going to be cutting back down to 155. He's looking small. He's doing some intermittent fasting. So we'll see what happens. I've been calling for the Conor McGregor GSP fight for like 3-4 years now. Hell, I've been calling for the Conor McGregor versus Khabib fight for almost 3 years now, but no one wanted to listen back at UFC 205. But hell, man, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. And we'll see what happens next month. I told you guys I'd give you a quick UFC 226 preview. Well, shit, let's get into it real quick. These last 4 or 5 minutes, here is the preview for UFC 226, where legends are made.
UFC 226, a legend will ride. Yes, there's been so much talk over the last couple years of super fight this, super fight that. This is a true super fight, my friends. Let me tell you, the light heavyweight champion of the world, Daniel Cormier, taking on the heavyweight champion of the world, Stipe Miocic. Man, oh man, what a matchup we have here. And let me preface this by saying that this isn't just any ordinary light heavyweight trying to move up. This isn't just Randy Couture, who is undersized for heavyweight, just moving up just to do it, just to prove a point. This is former Strikeforce heavyweight champion Daniel Cormier. This is undefeated heavyweight champion Daniel Cormier taking on the greatest UFC heavyweight of all time. Yes, I said it. Stipe Miocic officially passes Cain Velasquez as the number one heavyweight in UFC history. He's defended the belt three times, more than any other UFC heavyweight of all time. Cain Velasquez was great. But we all know the injuries. We've seen what he's done to Verdum. We've seen what he's done to Dos Santos. We've seen what he's done to Alistair. We saw what he did to Francis Ngannou. Stipe Miocic is here as a champ, and he is here to mark his spot in history by taking out Daniel Cormier, because if he beats DC, no doubt in my mind, he's the number one UFC heavyweight, probably the number one heavyweight of all time. I think he passes up Fedor Emelianenko. But as for this fight goes, I think DC has a very, very, very good chance of dethroning Stipe, and DC might become one of the greatest fighters ever. Forget about weight classes. This fight, the winner determines who's the number five spot on my Mount Rushmore of UFC fighters. Yes, I believe there's five people on Mount Rushmore, or is it four? Shit, there might only be four. Well, anyways, fuck it. I'm adding a fifth one to the list because on my rankings, let me tell you, my rankings for the greatest legacies of an MMA fighter, of a UFC fighter, is George St. Pierre, number one, John Jones, number two, Demetrius Johnson, number three, and Anderson Silva, number four. Number five spot is open for the taking. It's got DC, it's got Conor McGregor, it's got all those guys fighting for that number five spot. Hey, maybe Habib hops his way all the way up there, but I still think he's quite a way away. My top four, all-time GSP, John Jones, DJ, and Anderson Silva. Those are the four GOATs to me. But I'm telling you, if DC can enter this weight class, this personifications of the GOATs of the UFC, I know he'll always have that asterisk for not beating John Jones. But hey, Demetrius Johnson never got revenge against Dominic Cruz, and we still think of him as a GOAT. I think with DC becoming the second ever multiple champ, he's holding up two belts at once. Without a doubt in my mind, DC has got to be regarded as one of the best ever, especially if he goes up to heavyweight. Hell, I think if John Jones was in this matchup, I was talking about it the other day with my buddy, I think John Jones beats Stipe. Hell, I think John Jones beats anybody on the planet. If you would talk about the greatest fighter of all time, pure fighter, if I had to pick one man to go up against the alien race in a one-on-one fight, I'm picking John Jones over Anthony Joshua, over Mike Tyson, over anybody you can name. I don't care. I think John Jones takes out anybody, and John Jones should be in this fight fighting for the heavyweight championship. We heard him call out Brock Lesnar. Here's some breaking news for you. Brock Lesnar says, hey, I want that fight. So, hey, maybe once USADA is up, we'll get the return of John Jones at heavyweight fighting Brock Lesnar. Ooh, I can't wait for that. But the winner of this fight should get Brock Lesnar first, because we don't know how long John Jones is going to be out for. But man, oh man, what a setup that would be if DC gets the win, and then we got wrestler versus wrestler. Or just, hell, give Stipe some more pay-per-view bonuses. Give him some money. The man deserves it. He's a stoic giant. He's a firefighter. He's a man of the people, repping for Cleveland, Ohio. But I gotta go with the local kid. I know he's from Louisiana. That is Louisiana Dan. But he trains out of San Jose in AKA. And I think DC, I think his wrestling's gonna be a little bit too much. I know that Stipe definitely has the advantage in the power. But we've seen DC withstand the power of Anthony Rumble Johnson, the one man who had all the power in the light heavyweight division, which, so sadly, we never got to see him versus Johnny Jones. But I think DC's got the chin. Maybe it's weakened a little bit since he got knocked out by John Jones in a head kick. But Stipe ain't thrown too many goddamn head kicks. But you got to give Stipe his credit. He's a Gold Glove boxer. We saw what he was able to do on the feet against Francis Ngannou. We saw what he was able to do. He's also an All-American wrestler. This guy is a
complete mixed martial arts fighters. That's why I have him up there as potentially the greatest of all time at heavyweight. But hey, like I said, we'll see what happens. These are two fighters that I tremendously respect. I like both of them a lot, and this is gonna be a true super fight. Like I said, I can't wait. But let me give you a quick preview for the rest of this card before we run out of time, because man, oh man, this card is stacked. In the co-main event, we damn near got another super fight. It's Max Holloway versus Brian Ortega. Yes, it's the Blessed Era versus T-City. You want to talk about a fucking banger? T-City Brian Ortega is undefeated. No one has beat him at 145 pounds. Max Holloway, what is he on, a 13-fight win streak, I believe? His last loss was to Conor McGregor at 145 pounds, and that's when they were both youngins, barely had any tattoos, barely had any facial hair. Man, oh man, it's a great fight to go back and watch two young up coming talents. But Max Holloway, we all know the story, was supposed to step into UFC 223 to take on Khabib, trying to become a two-division champ, as I mentioned, Conor McGregor. But as the weight-cutting issues once again arose, he had to pull off. But now we're finally getting blessed back. Max Holloway taking on Brian Ortega. Brian Ortega, I've said it once and I'll say it again, probably has some of the best jiu-jitsu in all of MMA. Of course, Damian Maia is up there. Tony Ferguson is great with 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu. But Brian Ortega has been groomed up by the Gracie family his whole entire life. As I mentioned, he's 14-0, but there have been some fights that he's been in trouble. Hell, against Diego Sanchez, he was in trouble. Hell, against Clay Guida, he was in trouble. He's had a couple of fights where he's just pulled fucking knockouts and submissions out in the third round, but he has been improving and looking better and better. His fight night against Cub Swanson, when he jumped into a guillotine, he pulled guard standing and submitted him, and then his last performance against Frankie Edgar. Wow, just wow. You don't see Frankie Edgar get knocked out ever, and he lifted Frankie off his feet with an uppercut and put out the lights. So man, oh man, Brian Ortega, I've been keeping my eye on you for a while now. 14-0, and he finally gets his shot at the belt against the Blessed One, baby. It's the Blessed Era, Max Holloway. We know if there's one guy who likes to stand and bang, it's Max Holloway. I think Max definitely has the advantage on the feet. If he's able to stuff Brian Ortega's takedowns, doesn't let him pull guard or do any crazy shit, if this fight stays standing, I definitely got Max Holloway. But you never know, Brian Ortega could pull a submission off from literally anywhere, any round with any time left. I've seen it before, so this is going to be a barn burner to watch. And then you want to talk about the biggest barn burner on the card? It's Francis Ngannou versus Derek Lewis. Yes, the Black Beast versus the Predator. We're going to see some prime time swinging and banging. I guarantee this fight does not go past the first round. I guarantee you no one throws a leg kick or attempts a takedown. This is going to be straight swinging and banging. Derek Lewis has been calling out Francis Ngannou before his historic rise to the top. He was calling him an African booty scratcher, an African booty snitcher, whatever it was. Derek Lewis, he's got the jokes, and now he's got the fight he's been looking for. Francis Ngannou versus Derek Lewis. Man, I can't wait for this fight. This is worth the pay-per-view dollars alone. This is going to be a fucking barn burner. And then we heard Tai Tuivasa, who fought on UFC 225. He said he'd either like the winner or the loser of this fight. I think matches up great. Ah, man, this is going to be a tough one to call. They both have power. They both fucking swing them. Hopefully Francis improved his ground game. Maybe we'll see some wrestling from him. Who knows? He needs to get better, obviously, to get back to that championship level. Ah, man, this is a toss-up fight. I have nobody to pick. This is a flip a coin, and the other guy's getting knocked out. It's as simple as that. But let's look at the rest of his card. We also got Michael Chiesa coming back from that eye injury from Conor McGregor. He finally gets to fight Anthony Pettis. That was a fight that was supposed to happen at UFC 223. That should be a good fight. We got Gokhan Saki, the ex-kickboxing champ, taking on Khalil Roundtree. That should be a good fight of just throwing leg kicks. You want to talk about a fight, though? Throwing leg kicks. We got Uriah Hall. We all know Uriah Hall from the Ultimate Fighter. That spinning heel kick was absolutely devastating. Uriah Hall has always been the Anderson version that never made it, I guess. He was always compared to Anderson Silva, but he really has never fulfilled his potential, never really worked his way up, and now it's looking like he might be a sacrificial lamb to Paulo Costa, formerly known as Paulo Borrachina, the Eraser, one of the most handsomest men in all UFC. I still have no idea how this guy cuts down to 185 pounds. He looks like a fucking bodybuilder. man, I feel like I should say no homo when I'm talking about him, because Paulo Costa, he's becoming one of my favorite fighters. He absolutely melted Johnny Hendricks in his last fight in the UFC. Paulo Costa is a man to watch out for. That should be a fucking banger. And then we move on. We got Yancey Medeiros versus Mike Platinum Perry. That's another barn burner right there. These dudes are going to come out and put on a war. That's a potential sleeper of the night, potential fight of the night. This card is just so stacked. Hell, it's got Dan Hooker on the UFC Fight Pass prelims. There is just talent everywhere, all over for this card. I can't wait. I can't wait to bring you guys the UFC 226 Aftermath, breaking down this whole entire fight card, breaking down all the latest fight news. Hopefully, we got some news from the Diaz brothers, from GSP, Bisping. Will he ever come back? Will he stay retired? We don't know, but we will find out, and we will bring you all the latest MMA news right here on the Bays Golden Days podcast. I told you, shout out to my man Ariel Helwani. He's making the move to ESPN with the rest of the UFC, giving up his MMA Hour podcast. You need a replacement? Hit up your boy Bush. I'll come fill it in, get you guys all the MMA news. We got to keep you updated, and that's exactly what we do right here on the Bays Golden Days podcast. To get the podcast instantly, check out our website, bgdsports.com. You can download, subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts from these days. You can follow us on social media at Bays Golden Days on Instagram, Twitter, MySpace, LinkedIn, Friendster, Spotify. Add us on all your social medias. We'll be your friend. Add us your number one. Put us in your top eight. You know what it is. It's the Bays Golden Days, baby. Once again, thank you all for listening. My name is Marcus Boucher at Twitter, at Marcus Boucher. It's pretty fucking simple. If you can't find me, get the hell off Twitter. But follow the Bays Golden Days on Twitter, baby. Keep it updated and keep it golden. You know what it is. Golden, 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 golden.
Stay gold, pony boy.